Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Under the Helmet.
You do your thing, all right? Don't be nervous, okay?
The show that looks at long-term player value in fantasy football.
It's the moment right here. We're going to have to decide what type of team we want to be.
Building dynasties each and every week.
I don't even know your name. What's your name?
Chad Parsons.
I'm telling you, man, you're leading the league in hydration.
I got a dynasty team reaping rewards for the next decade.
Katie Flower.
You may beat me, but you will not outwork me.
Tim Torch.
There's only one winner, Chad.
Find their written and premium audio content at uthdynasty.com.
Playing it safe in Dynasty means you're going to lose.
Stop talking about it, man. Let's get this going right now.
Dynasty predictions for the 2021 season. Welcome to the uthdynasty.com Under the Helmet show for this week. Got Katie Flower. I am Chad Parsons. The season is upon us and we've got news. I've been updating, just a reminder, at uthdynasty.com. I think I've updated the running back injury away and depth chart for Fantasy Matrix about four times today. I've already updated a couple times the trade calculator because waivers Tuesday night into Wednesday, maybe even Thursday, first come, first serve, pretty much for everybody globally, with rare exception in your league. So this is the week really where you start moving and shaking, and it feels like week one. There's a crackle in the air, and we're here. Katie, do you have any comments before we get started on our predictions with some of the running back movement we have with Latavius Murray, Le'Veon Bell, Tyson Williams, you know, could be affected, Tony Jones. So we've got some applicable parties here with potentially injury away status on the line over the next few weeks.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised about Latavius Murray. I had heard murmurings of that when Tony Jones was showing out. And I picked up Tony Jones quite a bit in many of my leagues. It was a little bit expensive, but I figured if the truth is, and he looked good, if the truth is that Murray will be cut or whatever, then he's the number two guy to Kamara, and that's something I want to have. So I think that's great. Now we have clarity. Murray should land someplace, you would think, and there's a lot of places that still need, like Baltimore. Even though they just signed Le'Veon Bell, I'm not sure that Le'Veon Bell is going to be that impactful. We'll see. We'll find out.
Yeah, I think what you said, which is Tony Jones, you have to take him seriously, even if you were skeptical before, that has value. That has standalone. Kamara has not seen, I think the number is, he hasn't eclipsed even 200 carries in a season. So he's very much one of those dual threat, but we like to see him optimized in the passing game and don't want to see him plugging up in the middle with a lot of those, I'm not going to call them senseless, but a lot of those accumulating carries that don't mean a whole lot for the fantasy box score. And Tony Jones is going to take on those that Latavius Murray was going to. There's touchdown upside there. So you have to take that seriously. And you kind of said it, and I'll just say the action plan for Latavius Murray is don't just run and hide and cut him this week, because still moving pieces to be had. Break ties in his direction of saying, let's see how this develops. Plenty of depth charts that he could absolutely be the number two back and be that injury away status. And life emerges as nothing, you know, everything is unchanged. So be careful about making a whiplash decision with that regarding waivers this week. All right. So let's get to it. And we've got some predictions. I'll kick us off, Katie. I couldn't quite make it, you know, one per position or, you know, create a theme per each one. I'm going to start out with one, just a reminder about the running back position, which is my prediction is more than half of the NFL depth charts at running back will miss at least three games. And I track this on a yearly basis. Last year, it was 60% of the depth charts missed at least three games from their projected week one starter. And it was 41% in 2019. So average that together, it's about half. And we already have moving pieces of J.K. Dobbins and Cam Akers. They're already locked into 32 starts missed for their teams. That opens up the depth chart entirely. And we've already seen those teams add running backs. We've seen elevation from their existing players as well. So I would say those are the first two, more dominoes to fall. Who's next? And just a reminder that the next man up and who's the cheapest is always the, well, who is behind the next man up? So always be thinking of, oh, I missed out on, running back 2X. Like right now, oh, Tony Jones. Well, let's see what the Saints do. Is it Dwayne Washington, that might be in that next bird dog seat? Is it someone not on the team yet? But just monitor situations like that of, maybe there's a guy that's working through a hamstring injury. If that tightens up, who's the next man up? So this is going to be something we do weekly during the season because it's valuable, because running back has the ability by its position and by its nature to clarify those fantasy starts. So we already have some depth charts changing. It has not even got to week one. We outlined a couple situations that have changed in the last 24 hours. So it changes a lot. This is just the beginning, and welcome to the train ride. And next stop is week one, which means full workloads for a lot of these backs. And that means more change, more risk of this occurring even more frequently.
And we say this year after year after year. So if you're a new listener and you just happen to tune in, what your roster looks like in May and June at running back, it does not matter. That's why we are proponents for lots of depth, injury away type guys, rookies that will potentially fill that injury away or the next man up, guys that could tote the load by themselves if given that opportunity, like Gus Edwards, like AJ Dillon, those kind of guys. And so I think you're right. I think that's a good prediction. I don't have a lot of specific player predictions per se, but the one that I have involving running backs is very bold, and I'm going to say that Nick Chubb is a league winner this year. And I think so because Cleveland has a really good offensive line. They've got a very, very top offense and defense. And I think they're primed. They've got a decent schedule. I think they're primed to be one of the best offenses and defenses in the NFL. And I think Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt, for that matter, will be the beneficiary of that. They're not going to be behind in games a lot, so they're going to be able to run and run and run, which they like to do. And then they've got enough wide receivers and tight ends to be able to mix it up and keep it going.
Yeah, I was just thinking while you're talking, have we really had an extended run of this Chubb-Hunt duo where one of them has missed time? It seems like both of them have been operating together basically their time in Cleveland. Once Hunt has been back, that it seems like we haven't really had that full run of either guy. And yet we know that any game, one thing that I was saying, I think on the running back roundup leading into week one, one of the premium shows, is that, each one of these guys, and you're saying it already, that Chubb can still get there independent of anything. But that if the other is out, we're talking the remaining back is like a top 3, 4, 5 projection unquestioned for that week or whatever duration. That's where the redraft, prognostication, where do they line up projecting stats for the week? That's where they're going to be. And they're going to be below that. But both, even Hunt gets optimized usage, finishing drives. He gets plenty of touchdowns, 2-minute work to be a top 24 option. And that's with Chubb being one of the leaders in rushing attempts, with potentially challenging any year for the touchdown lead. So yeah, this is a team that if they're smart, they're going to build around and center on the run game. And that works best with Baker Mayfield. Let's hope Odell Beckham is healthy. They got some good tight ends. They are really primed on offense. Baker Mayfield, don't mess it up. It's, because the defense is there, the offensive line, the weapons are there, everything's there for them to be successful fantasy and NFL wise. So yeah, pretty excited about that team. But it's, if one of them is out for a month, I mean, the other one, it could go absolutely bonkers. I mean, we're talking, I think a lot of people forget Kareem Hunt was it the running back 1 or running back 3? I mean, he was absolutely a revelation rookie season, just walking into the Chiefs. And it's been a long time since then. And now people kind of view him as, you know, a backup with starting ability on his own and all that stuff. But he was, I mean, a first rounder. And I think there might have been a rogue startup or two where he was like 101, 103, something like that, when he first started splashing on the scene. All right. I got a rookie wide receiver one. And this is based on some historical data as well. But I also think there's plenty of signs for these situations specifically. And my prediction here is none of Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith, or Ja'Marr Chase will finish as a top 24 wide receiver this year. And there's questions with each. With Waddle, you have competition for targets. He doesn't really fit the alpha profile. You got Will Fuller coming back into the mix. I think a lot of people might be forgetting that. Devontae Parker's still there. Mike Gesicki. How about Tua? Is he going to supply a top 24 wide receiver? I think that's a critical question. Devonta Smith, I don't trust Jalen Hurts to provide that. I don't really trust the Eagles. We'll see. It's going to center around those tight ends, in my opinion. Ja'Marr Chase, he's got two good wide receivers there. Joe Burrow, is he not healthy? Is he not going to be mobile? That offensive line being a question. So there's a lot of things going on there. Top 24 is a high bar, and only about 6%, even of the round one wide receivers, end up being top 24 in year one, 6%. So most of them, it's year two and year three is the heavy dominant zone that they end up hitting for top 24 their first year for that breakout. And I just don't see the perfect storm from those guys this year that makes me want to take that bet. And I think only Ja'Marr Chase in redraft is kind of close to there in terms of that top 25 or so at the position. But to me, I've gotten him zero spots. I would, if I did 10 more drafts, I'd get him in zero spots. I just don't think the equation is there for especially these three.
Yeah, in redraft, Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins are side by each. And I'd much rather have T. Higgins at that price tag. Thank you very much. That's not a bad take. I am going with my last specific player prediction, and you probably will not be surprised by this because I've been pounding the drum for this dude for the whole offseason. I'm going to say Laviska Shenault will be a top 12 wide receiver this season. He's got a lot of opportunity there in Jacksonville. I think he's going to really click with Trevor Lawrence. He can run. He's a big, big guy, very physical. So he can take some of those Travis Etienne snaps. He can do, you know, the jet sweeps and all different kinds of running plays, as well as he's a much better route runner. He's got good hands. And I already said he's physical. I think he'll be a top 12 wide receiver this season in fantasy.
Okay. And is top 12 going to be at the expense of all the other wide receivers there? Is that going to be because Trevor Lawrence elevates and, you know, does more than, say, Joe Burrow did a year ago? Who's going to be the connecting piece of fantasy implications if Shenault does go top 12?
I think that it's going to be the combination of Trevor Lawrence is going to feed him, target him, and Laviska's ascendance into that better as a route runner, just yep, better overall, more comfortable with the NFL in season three. And I just think it's that combination.
Do you think he, if that occurs, I mean, will he vault all the way to the point where we saw what happened last year with guys like T. Higgins? And there was a revolving door of young wide receivers, rookies and otherwise, that when they have a big game, all of a sudden it's like, oh, that guy's a top five or top two dynasty receiver. Shenault, do you think he has the profile that, like, as this big year for him is occurring under this prediction, that, I mean, is he going to be one that, does he have enough juice to get all the way home market appeal wise of, well, he's producing now, he's producing to a high level, and he's going to be viewed in that, I'm trying to think, yeah, I mean, I guess it would be T. Higgins and a few guys from last year of that ilk, or CeeDee Lamb. Like, is he going to be viewed in that era of, like, just a blank check, get whatever you want? Or is it still going to be, he plays for the Jags and he didn't, you know, he doesn't quite have the strongest appeal, Debbie wise or profile wise, entering the NFL? Like, do you think there's going to be a little roadblock holding him back from that ultimate ceiling that Twitter just ends up, you know what I mean? You know, they cycle around, and it's like he's so hot.
Right. I know what you mean, but I think the combination of Trevor Lawrence as the quarterback of the future. The
connecting pairing, yeah.
Right, exactly. Plus, it's a year three, typical year three wide receiver breakout. And he was hot on Twitter as a rookie. We faded him because we didn't like the price point, and we had to see a lot more route running other than the gadgety type. We knew he was an athlete coming out of Colorado. By the way, his brother plays for Colorado, and
he made a nice catch. I only saw one catch from him, but he's got a nice build, very fluid.
Yep.
So,
and he's got a great quarterback, Brandon Lewis. Yep. That's going to be a nice combination in college football to watch for. But anyway, Laviska Shenault had a good following his rookie season. So I think his name cachet with the year three breakout, with Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback of the Jags for the future, I think that he will be vaulted, maybe not into round two of startup drafts, but certainly by round three of startup drafts.
I would just connect one thing to, you know, Shenault rising. And I was already down on DJ Chark, but I think the signing of Marvin Jones was a big deal for Chark as well. With Marvin Jones, a legit resume profiled receiver of what he's done in the NFL, and having that vertical ability and kind of competing with Chark in that fashion, I think the big loser in this whole Jacksonville equation is going to be DJ Chark because of Jones and because of Shenault this year. So that would be another one that I would just mention here as we're talking about it. My third, talking about a specific tight end and the top of the board here, which is going to be when we get to January, TJ Hockenson is going to be valued more than two tight ends ahead of him in August. So I'm not going to predict which two, but the four ahead of him, and he's going to be ahead of two, in my opinion. We have Pitts, Kittle, Kelsey, and Waller. So there's age at play for Kelsey and Waller. If Kittle were to have injury, I know people are already kind of having some concern with him. I also think competition for targets in San Francisco could be a question mark. Kyle Pitts feels pretty darn insulated. I know we got a little bit of a flash in the preseason. We'll see how. I mean, if he has an okay rookie season, he's going to be right there at tight end one, tight end two. And I think the floor is so, so high of, even if he disappoints a little bit, as long as he flashes through, you know, during the season, he's going to be insulated in that spot. I just think there's enough risk with the other three that I think Hockenson will get past him, because I think he's going to be, you know, Goff is a legit quarterback. I think that team has plenty of limitations, especially at wide receiver. They're bringing in, you know, Kadarius Hodge. I mean, they're anything that is going to throw against the wall, they're going to try it at wide receiver, but they just don't have a lot. And I think Hockenson is almost going to be Mark Andrews-like, but with more athleticism, and he's going to have the opportunity to be the wide receiver one for that team. So full-fledged opportunity to have an elite season, and he already is valued in the top five or six consensusly. So I think he has a real chance to get into the top two or three.
Yeah, I'm not necessarily going to disagree with that. And one of the things that we look for when it comes to tight ends is, do they have a strong wide receiver presence? That's undoubtedly a big no when it comes. You got Terrell Williams, you got Amon-Ra St. Brown, rookie coming in. They just cut Rashad Perriman. So it's going to be a mishmash for Jared Goff trying to figure out, and Hockenson will be his binky. Absolutely. My next prediction, I'm going to go with Jared Goff's old team. And my prediction is that the Rams will have the most fantasy relevant wide receivers and quarterback, but not running back or tight end. So no top 12 running back, no top 12 tight end, but they will be two top 12, well, top 24 wide receivers and a top 12 quarterback.
Okay. So Higbee would be one that, you know, doesn't quite get back to where he was. I think he had some 4-6 week close, maybe two seasons ago. Maybe it was even three seasons ago now. But no Gerald Everett. I know a lot of people are optimistic about him, but it feels like Cooper Kupp is that lost name here, doesn't it? That a lot of people are forgetting. he's going to be open with regularity, and he's got Matt Stafford throwing him the ball. I'm pretty excited about Woods and Kupp, and they've both been top-notch together before, and I think they're just going to – I mean, they're going to be open for days with that system and the arm talent of Stafford, and I kind of agree with you. So many question marks at running back. What do we know? We know those two wide receivers pretty well, and Stafford has done better with worse, to be fair. So pretty excited about that trio specifically, that they're going to get it going. Do you think of Henderson and Michelle, do you think one of them is better value than the other right now? I know Michelle's a little bit cheaper, but there's a tremendous market pause with both of them.
Well, I definitely have pause on both of them, but definitely go with Sony Michel. I think he's as talented, if not more talented, than Henderson, and he's not banged up right now.
Yeah, and I think people forget round one picks, bet on them until they're out of the league. You know, and Michel, to be fair, you know, with the Patriots, they put people in roles sometimes. And if Henderson is dinged up or just underwhelms a little bit, Michel could run with this thing. Jake Funk is the last guy standing on that team. He's a rookie. He's a little bit undersized. And he was a later day three pick. A round one Sony Michel, that should be a speed bump scenario. I mean, to think that we might not have, you know, that we could have a run of 4-6 weeks where Sony Michel is basically being used like Cam Akers was being used to close last year and have some 20 carry games with multiple touchdowns and 100 plus yards. That is fully in play here. And I think a lot of people are sleeping on that possibility with Michel that, you know, I think if he starts out the year and it's a lot of Daryl Henderson, Michel is that guy you want to look at in that depth chart of just saying it's a ticking time bomb. And to think that Michelle's not going to get some clarified starts this year, I just mentioned in the first one, you know, that many of these depth charts have a change for three or more games by way of injury and by way of absence of the starter. And right now, Daryl Henderson is the projected starter. And that's, I think, how the season is going to begin. How does October look? How does November look? So you got to be really careful about going too hot and heavy on what you see very first thing during the season. All right, next one. And we're going to go straight to Tampa Bay. We've got, all right. And this is just going to be a reminder to not tamp down elite veterans too much and to not vault up rookie quarterbacks too much. And the season, when we actually accrue points, when we actually set lineups, is the time when people get reminded, sometimes harshly, of this. And it happens every year, especially at quarterback. Tom Brady will outscore every rookie quarterback this season. And I would remind folks that only Mac Jones is lower in Dynasty ADP right now. And Brady will run for fewer yards than all of them. So rushing is the fast track. But I think even Mac Jones is going to have more rushing because Brady pretty much doesn't run too much anymore. And again, I think Brady is poised to be in the top eight. I don't think any rookie quarterback is going to get there. And we still don't have an arrival date for some of the rookie quarterbacks. And I think the ones that are starting, there's going to be plenty of growing pains. And I would argue that Brady has an elite collection of weapons where the floor is tremendously high.
I don't disagree that the team has a much higher floor. And in fact, that leads, that segues beautifully into my bold prediction or prediction, whatever. I'm going to say that the Bucs have the easiest path to a return Super Bowl appearance ever. It's just a question of which AFC team is going to be their opponent. And I don't know if you've looked at their record, but it's just the NFC is pretty weak. It's down, and they've got more opponents that have bottom 11 defenses than top five. And all the returning players, including Gronk and O.J. Howard. I love Brady, but I still don't necessarily believe that he's going to be top eight in fantasy points. Just because of the rushing. I think someone like Zach Wilson might surpass him. I don't know that Trevor Lawrence can. Just because man, it I don't know, but I'm going to say Zach Wilson. I'm going to go with the.
Do you know one the odds of any rookie quarterback finishing in the top 10 or something in a given season? It is pretty low.
No, but I'm saying they're going to finish higher than Brady. I don't think Brady's top eight. I think Brady will be a little lower than what you think. And I think one of the rookies, I'm not going to say who.
No, I got you. But you got the whole field, right? And they all to some degree have mobility. So yeah, they have, if Fields were to get in there week two and he's running around, you know, for 800, but I'm just saying, like, if he ran for 800 yards, I mean, that fast tracks you, you know, 800 yards and 7 touchdowns. That's, you know, that's going to get you places fantasy wise, even if you throw for 15 touchdowns. So yeah, I mean, there are plenty of outs. I just think with the weapons. So anyway, what's your next point?
Okay. So my last one is, I don't think that Baltimore is going to make the playoffs. And in fact, I think they're going to lose 6 out of their last 7 matchups.
Okay. Is there a fantasy implication there? Or they're just a team that is not going to do as well as everyone would project?
They're, because J.K. Dobbins is gone and they're losing other pieces here and there, I don't think that Lamar Jackson can carry the whole burden. And he hasn't really been a passer. And who does he have? He's got Marquise Brown up and down. He's got Sammy Watkins up and down. He's got just...
There's a real worst case scenario, right? I mean, Rashad Bateman, when will he play? How will he look when he actually gets in there? But they have, but when you look at that, well, they're the perfect storm of what if all those three receivers at some point in time are out? Now it's Mark Andrews and Rub Sticks together, you know? And so what's he going to do then? Run around? And what if he gets hurt? Because he's trying to, you know, all of a sudden they're 3-3 and they're fighting, you know, in a tough division with the Steelers and the Browns and, you know, trying to position themselves to just make the playoffs. And he doesn't slide. You know, he's a competitor. I watched him at Louisville. He was beating teams or competitive with teams that Louisville had no business competing against because he was the ultimate playmaker and the ultimate Madden creative player. So yeah, and he's another one that I just sort of check my watch and be like, the way he plays, the number of shots he takes that other quarterbacks do not take, that the rules cannot protect him. I don't predict injury, but he is more susceptible with the way he plays. And I know he's played this way for years and he really hasn't had that big injury. I understand all that, but you get out of the pocket, you start running reckless like a running back, game on. The rules are far different for you 5 yards down the field than they are just sitting there in the pocket. And that's why these quarterbacks throw the ball away because they know few guys can touch them, you know, in spots that can really affect them, you know, the head and below the knee, you know, there in the pocket. So, wow. Yeah. The Ravens, that actually, you know, you think about it, the running back group, there's a lot of question marks. And Gus Edwards, he's never really been the guy. A lot of pressure, a lot of upside, obviously, if he were to come through. But what if Gus Edwards misses time? That's a huge moving piece for the run game as well. So, yeah, I love that one. All right, I got one more here. And this is one of my favorites. I probably mentioned it on the show, some show, at least a couple of times between, you know, the last 4 or 5 months. But this, to me, is one of the biggest moving pieces at wide receiver. I think Corey Davis could be big. I think there's a few others that absolutely could crush their redraft and dynasty price this whole offseason. But here's going to be one. And again, I think the older market, the bridge market, is really one that can pay dividends. And I'm going to go with this one, that Antonio Brown will lead the Buccaneers in targets and in PPR points. He's going to end up being one of the biggest value plays of the receiver position. And here's one stat that I don't think a lot of people are tracking. Just like the out of sight, out of mind of I think I mentioned somebody else, but that active wide receivers in the NFL, wide receiver one seasons, we have Julio Jones with 9. If Larry Fitzgerald plays, he has 8. So he may or may not count, but it's Julio 9. The next guy is Antonio Brown with 6. Active wide receivers in the NFL, he's number 2 or number 3 at worst. That's the list. We're talking about one of the most dominant runs in his prime that we have seen in the last decade. And he's the cheapest one on the depth chart by far. I love Mike Evans. I think Chris Godwin's a little overcooked. And so, so betting on that, and he's been for two seasons a relative wash. So I get the out of sight, out of mind. But when he came back and played the half season last year, he was right there with Godwin and Evans for targets. And I know it's a spread around team. It could go a variety of directions. But the one thing I keep coming back to is, who is the Edelman? Who is the Welker on this team? It's not Evans. It's not Godwin. It's Antonio Brown, if anybody. If there is one. But I just know he's going to be the guy that can get open at will with all the other distraction that defenses are going to have. And they're not going to want to get gutted 40 yards down the field with a 50-50 ball that Mike Evans comes down with a lot that's not 50-50. I just think that that a defense would rather get carved up 8 yards at a time. And I think if there is just a huge beyond their price point player here, it's Antonio Brown. Of don't be surprised. He came in mid-season and instantly was getting 8, 10, 12 targets in a lot of these games. And I don't think that's going to change. If anything, that's going to elevate for a team rolling it back. And so he's like in the wide receiver 50s or something. And I think he has a chance to go half that, even closer to the top 20. My whole thing is, don't be surprised how high he is, because he's one of the best we've seen. And now he's with one of the best quarterbacks we've seen. So to me, the equation is easy of what's the best case scenario. It's very, very high this year. And that's with two other legit wide receivers. One of them is one of my favorite guys ever in Mike Evans. So I'm saying this. So the difference in price is the big part, but also saying what pairs best with Brady. And it's a guy that instantly gets open, a guy that's open regularly inside of 10 yards. And they used Godwin a little bit in the first couple months of the season. But I think Antonio Brown is going to be option A this year for Brady in that capacity.
Well, and Brady and Brown have already played together and they have that chemistry.
They shared a bathroom.
Well, exactly. Exactly. No, I like that. I don't disagree with that one.
All right. So final thoughts as we head into week one here, and we've been passing around a lot of different ideas, a lot of teams, whether it's something for a dynasty owner specifically, as a reminder here, heading into the season, heading into so many data points, we're not going to blink a little bit on Sunday into Monday and just all the changing landscape that's going to be happening in week one of things we didn't expect, false positives, positives. What kind of comes to your mind after having this dialogue about our own predictions, but also the rest of fantasy at large?
Okay. So a little bit of fantasy advice and then a shout out. First of all, as week one approaches, whether you've got one dynasty team or 35 or 50, set it and forget it. Don't tinker. Too many times we overthink and we try to, you know, especially early in the season, go with your gut, set your lineup, walk away. Do so with no regrets. I mean, just know your stuff. Set your lineups. Now, you may want to look at them halfway through and just see if the late games have somebody that, you know, if you got to make up some points, maybe you shift in player A for player B. But 99% of your lineup should remain the same unless there's an injury question or maybe you got to come from behind kind of thing. So that's my advice as far as when you're going into the season. And then my shout out is I heard from several different listeners, but one of my buddies, Enad, especially, he called me up to say he really enjoyed our redraft episode, got a lot out of it, and thanked us for doing that. So just thank you all for listening. You know, as another season approaches, thank you for listening. There's a lot of shows out there. There's a lot of voices out there. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, that's excellent, because there's only so many shows, so many hours in a day or week for you to listen to Dynasty content. I will say, how awesome is it that it's so accessible on devices and phones that I still remember having to download it to an MP3 device and take that with you. So you had to do it at home and download the files onto something separate. And now that it just basically comes in, you sync it and you're good to go. And it just alerts you every time a new show pops up for whatever. And you can almost cultivate your own radio station of what content am I interested in? If that's football, if that's some other topic or entirely. But yeah, and as we close these different times, you know, whether it's closing the season, closing the off season, we basically have two different seasons in Dynasty. And this kind of closes the rookie draft time, you know, that kind of closes a lot in May and June per se, but you still have some, you know, that trickle out later on, but we've had the preseason, but now it's time. Now it's the 4 month actual test of here's what we've been building for our teams. Let's improve upon what we did a year ago through trading and drafting and optimizing the back end of our roster. And now we're here, you know, and Katie said a lot of times, you know, we overthink the lineup part, which is the last draw. And I would just remind folks, you're not going to get it all right. You know, I think we think that there's some skeleton key for lineups, which means you get everything right. Lineups are basically DFS. And DFS is ripe with, I mean, one game oscillations of injuries or missed snaps or not getting the goal line touch or two DPIs instead of a long touchdown. There's so many moving pieces to what make a good game versus a nondescript game. And that's why I try to encapsulate with my notes in the film notes show each week of letting you know, hey, he got stuffed three times in a row at the goal line. That's probably not going to happen a lot. You know, he could have had a couple touchdowns or 150 yards. He had 3 for 50. It wasn't that great, but he was there. He was getting the opportunities. It'll happen next time, you know, or they got really fortunate. You know, his touchdown run, anyone could have scored. It was pretty random and it was late in the game. And so these are the sort of nuances that go into just a box score when you look at it on Monday or 3 weeks from now. It's like, oh, so-and-so scored 20 points. Well, how did they get there? Is it sustainable or not? And I think the overthinking the lineups, overthinking a lot of stuff, the keep it simple and enjoy the process. You know, that if you have a few leagues, know that you're going to overachieve in some, underachieve in others. It's about the process. It's about making the best decisions you can with the information available and having a process, having something that you're going to repeat and look at the results as you go in a bigger picture. And like Katie, I just want to thank everybody for listening. Remind the UTH subscribers that are in the best ball contest. You have about 24 hours, check Swatch, to get your entries in. And you're doing me a favor the earlier you get them in, because I've got to do those manually. And, you know, every minute counts as we lead up to kickoff here on Thursday. Might have to fill some available openings, but love to run the best ball contest. And remind folks, if you enjoy this free weekly show, you would want to check out the premium shows over at UTHDynasty.com. Mentioning the podcasting, now you can get all those premium shows anywhere you want them, any podcasting app delivered as a subscriber. So seamless there. And a reminder, no ads on the show. So patreon.com/UTH. Get more content with Tim Torch and others and some exclusive content like Dynasty trading advice on the regular. There's a VIP chat as well as a VIP strategy session live I do every single week on Wednesday nights. So for Katie Flower, and you can hit her up between episodes on Twitter at FF_Skyler399. I am at Chad Parsons NFL. And until next week, enjoy the games and never settle, refuse to be average, and keep building those dynasties.
Keep building those dinosaurs? What?
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts, so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.